2 weeks ago, we watched as Christ shifted his attention from the subject or from the idea of you and I as believers being salt and light in this world, whether we want to be or not, to that of the law. And you may remember that I reminded us that whenever we think of the law, probably what we think of is completely different than what your typical Jew would have thought of when they thought of the law. Because generally, I think most of us would think of the Old Testament and what we see recorded in the Scripture. But the Jew, in their day, not only had the recorded Word of God that they had to worry about, they also had to worry about the oral traditions of the religious leaders, the oral traditions of the Pharisees, and it was a very demanding religious life that they had to adhere to. And so, as you looked at the Pharisees, as you looked at the religious leaders, here's what we know and here's what is clear throughout the Scripture. What they were worried about more than anything was outward conformity to what they said was important and to what they said made you a good religious person. They did not care about the heart whatsoever. They just wanted good outward actions. And I said last week, Pharisees have not died off. We have adopted new names and we have new denominations, but Pharisees are still very much alive and well. We still live in a culture, religiously speaking, where people many times are not worried about the heart of a matter. They're just worried about the outward conformity. And so last week we began looking in verses number 21 and 22, where Christ said, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill." So we understood what Christ was referencing. He was referencing the commandment that you and I are not supposed to take an innocent life. You and I are not supposed to murder. This was not a reference to self-defense or battle or anything of that nature, but rather this was just the innocent, the taking of an innocent life, the act of murder. And he said, whoever does murder should be in danger or will be in danger of the judgment. And I said last week, it is so easy for you and I to be so critical of the murderer because they obviously have anger issues. But what did Christ say? He said in verse number 22, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment." And so Christ said, I don't want to just talk about murder in this broad sense where you take a person's life. He said, I want to talk about the heart issue, the issues that you and I tonight, we would struggle with, that being anger. Last week when the message was concluded, I had a couple of people say something like this, "Well, I'm glad I don't struggle with that." Or something like this, "So does that mean I can't?" That's exactly what that means. We can't do this and pretend that we don't still have anger issues in our heart. And so he said, if you're angry with your brother and there's no biblical cause for it, there's no scriptural cause for it, then you are in danger of the same judgment as the one who murders and takes the life. He said, whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, if you were to lash out at someone, that indicates the anger issues that you have in your heart. And then, whosoever shall say, thou fool. That was the idea of you and I feeling as though we had the right to cast judgment on a person's soul in anger. Okay? And you and I are not in a position to do such. I know sometimes we as independent Baptists think that the Lord needs our help. However, He is doing fine without us, and He does not need our help in the matter. Okay? So that's what we talked about last week, and tonight we're going to be moving on. But before we do, I want to ask you a series of questions, and just bear with me, because your options are limited. Okay? Just bear with me. All right. I want to ask you first this evening, how many of you have ever eaten a food so much that what you used to love no longer sounds good anymore? It happens, doesn't it? It happens at least twice a year here. I am so thrilled and I am so excited about the fish fry coming up. I can't wait till the fish fry gets here. It gets here and I eat until I am hurting. I eat until I am sick. And then at the end of the night, somebody says, "You want to take some of this home with you?" Not a chance. I've had all the fish I need for a while. How many of us have ever sold something that when we bought it, we just knew this was the last one we'd ever need of this or something like it? Maybe this wouldn't apply to you, but it'd be something like this. This is the last car we're buying for a while. And for a while, I mean until we get tired of this one. And then we'll go ahead and buy a new one. The wife may say something like this. This is the exact furniture I've been looking for. And then it's owned for a couple of years, and a statement like this is made. I've never really cared for it once we got it home. Okay. Silence. It might be something like this. I really like this gun. Yeah, I've never really liked it since I've owned it. It never really shot right, so I'm going to go ahead and sell it. It might be a car, it might be a motorcycle, it might be some kind of a toy, something of that nature. How many of us have ever quit going places that we used to enjoy going to, and not for biblical reasons or for scriptural reasons, it's just not as much fun as it once was? Maybe you used to go to the lake a lot more than you go now, or maybe you used to go to this particular vacation spot, maybe you used to go to this restaurant a lot, maybe it used to be something else that you would frequent, and you would go there because it was a lot of fun, but it's like you've been there so many times now that it doesn't have the same appeal that it once had. That happens to us, doesn't it? So here we are people who can eat so much that what we once loved no longer sounds good. We can buy things that we think are just going to make us eternally happy, only to find out, yeah, I'm kind of tired of it, and I'd like to get rid of it. These places that we say are so much fun to go to, or these places are so enjoyable to be at, we get to the point where we no longer have to have them to be happy. So what is it about us that could be said? Well, tonight it could be said of us that we are people who grow tired of things for a variety of reasons. You understand what I'm saying? We are a people who grow tired of things for many different reasons. That in mind, I'm going to take you back a few years to 1993. Some of you have heard this story. Some of you are tired of this story, but I don't get tired of telling it, so I'm going to share it again like it's the first time you've ever got to hear it. But it was in May of 1993. It was a Sunday morning. I was sitting in my Sunday school class. The very first time I'd ever gone to this Sunday school class, I was sitting by myself because nobody else would sit with me. After all, I was the visitor and I wasn't a part of the clique yet. And so there I am sitting in the Sunday school class all by myself, and I turn around and I see this beautiful young woman walk into the room. I don't remember what her name was, but right behind her was Susie. I'm just teasing. I am teasing. Okay, I'm sitting there all by myself. I turn around and here comes this beautiful young woman with this radiant glow about her. I later found out it was sweat because she had just gotten off of the bus route, but nonetheless, it looked like a radiant glow. And I said to myself, that is who I am going to marry one day. That's what I said to myself. I had nobody else to say it to, so I said it to myself, that is who I will marry one day. It took about 6 weeks for me to get my courage up to invite her out on the first date, but I did, and then that made asking her for the second date a lot easier. And then, of course, the third date and the fourth date. And then pretty soon we were going steady. Whatever that meant, we were going with each other. That was the terms we used back at that time. We were just going with each other. And so here we were going with each other in 1993. In my mind, I had it that we were going to get married in the very near future. And please understand, I'm going to do my best to keep all of this G-rated, all right? Donna? Well, sure enough, I have to edit that out. Okay. I remember the first time Susie and I held hands. And I mean, it was like the fireworks just... It was, oh, wow. Frontier City, we had just gotten off the roller coaster that does a couple of loops and makes you sick. And we were walking away from the roller coaster and her hand touched mine and mine touched hers. And, oh... So I remember the first time we touched hands and finally held hands. I remember the first time, and I know you don't care about this, so I'll just say it quick. First time we kissed, okay? Anyways, and again, the bells and the whistles and the firecrackers and everything was just going off. And it was just wonderful, and I was enjoying this going steady or going with Susie. And long, long story short, there came that day that I proposed to her. I got down on one knee and I said, "Will you marry me?" And she said yes, and I knew she was going to because we had already talked about it, but still there was this excitement and there was this anticipation, and we got to celebrate that day with my parents, and it was an exciting moment. And then fast forward about 8 or 9 or 10 months later, and June 16th, 1995, we got married, and the next day we left for our honeymoon, and we got to spend a few days away from everything, just enjoying one another's company and time together. And all of that was great, and all of that was wonderful. And then about June 21st, somewhere around there, June 22nd, guess what happened? Reality began to set in. I had to go back to work, and she had to go back to work. And not only that, we had to move a few weeks later up to Springfield, Missouri, and I had to find a job, and she had to find a job, and I was going to school, and she was working full-time, and so our schedules were crazy at the time, and we would really only see each other for any extended amounts of time on the weekends, and so we tried to enjoy the weekends together as much as we could. And then before long, Nathan was born, and that was fantastic. But right after that, we moved again to begin ministry there in Tulsa, and soon after that, Hannah was born, and we were having a wonderful time with our small, cute little family. And then we moved out here, and soon after that, Leah was born, and you've got pressure here, and you've got messages here to preach, and you've got ministry to do, and I'm still trying to grow up, and Susie's still trying to grow up, and all of these things are happening, it seems like, one right after another. And here's what happened. The reality of reality set in. It set in my life just like it set in your life. And so I go back to that very first time that Susie and I went out. And I go back to that very first time that we held hands and we kissed and I proposed and we got married, and all said and done, Susie and I have about 21 years of our lives invested of each other. Now, I know for some of you that's not very many, but for some of us that's a lot. And there's something I've learned over the course of 20 years of almost marriage and 21 years by way of marriage and relationship, that a good marriage, as you know, takes a lot of commitment and hard work. A good marriage takes a lot of commitment and a lot of hard work. Now understand what I'm about to say, please. Listen. I still enjoy holding Susie's hand. But I'd be lying if I said the fireworks go off every time like it did the first time. I still enjoy it, but I'm just telling you, it's not the same. I still enjoy stealing a kiss from her, especially if the kids are watching. Because they're like, "Dad!" But it's not the same. I still enjoy going out on dates with her, but it's not the same. And here's what I've discovered in my life, and if a person is honest, they have to admit in their life. If they are not careful, they can grow tired of their spouse, just like they grow tired of anything else in their life. I love catfish, and I can eat catfish until I'm absolutely sick, but there comes a point where catfish doesn't mean as much to me as it once did. And I can enjoy this new toy, and I can enjoy this vacation spot, and I can enjoy this time of relaxation or whatever it may be, and I can truly enjoy it, but if that's what I have a steady diet of, I'm probably going to get tired of it. And I've discovered that even in marriage, as much as I love Susie and as much as she loves me, if I'm not careful and if I'm not willing to put the work into this, and if she's not willing to put the work into it like it needs, then here's what can happen. We can grow tired of each other. We can absolutely grow tired of each other. And then here's what tends to be the temptation. to begin looking for that buzz and that thrill someplace else. Because when it is new, it is always exciting. When it is new, it is always exciting. I'm here to tell you, if you were to enter into a new relationship, there would still be elements about it. No matter how many years you were in a relationship prior, there would still be elements of it that were new. Why? Because it's, or it would still be exciting. Why? Because it is new. And so here's what I've seen, and here's what you have seen over the years, that there have been many people who have been married just long enough that it's no longer exciting, it's no longer fireworks, it's no longer bells and whistles, it's no longer these tingly feelings and all this other stuff. And not only that, man, you've gotten old, never mind, I've stayed the same, and you put on some weight, never mind, I haven't, whatever the excuse may be. So now, because it's not as exciting as it once was, I've got to go find a thrill someplace else. And what eventually happens? Immorality eventually takes place. Because that's where the buzz is found. And so, like many of you, over the years I've heard testimony of, did you hear that so-and-so had an affair? Did you know that so-and-so cheated on their spouse? And you know what I do? More times than not, I get on my pharisaical high horse. How terrible. How awful. How horrible that one would commit adultery. Question, is it horrible? Is it awful? Is it terrible? Is it sinful? Is it wicked? Is it something that displeases God? Of course it is. It is all of that. But it's kind of like the murderer. It is so easy for me to get onto my pharisaical high horse, to get on my little platform and say, you naughty little people. When, in fact, I have heart issues. What? I got anger issues. And I've got other issues that reside in my heart that I don't like to talk about. Now, this evening, here's what I suspect. While some left last week and said, oh, I'm glad I don't struggle with that. And while some others laughed and said, you mean I can't say such and such? I'm suspecting that tonight, whenever it's all said and done, you're not going to leave here saying, I can't do that. Why? Because we're smart enough to know we don't want to talk about certain things. But just because we don't talk about certain things doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so tonight what we're going to do is skip a few verses. We'll come back to them in a few weeks. But I want us to look down in verse number 27 tonight. Because there in Matthew chapter 5, verse number 27, here is what Christ says. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. Is that not what the law declares in Exodus chapter 20? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Is there anything wrong with the statement that was made in Exodus chapter 20? Well, obviously not. Come on, when God declared in Exodus chapter 20 to His people, thou shalt not commit adultery, that is exactly what He said, that is exactly what He meant, and if you wanted to live in sin, if you wanted to live in violation of God's written word and God's express law, then just go out and have an affair, sir or ma'am, and you are now living in disobedience to God's word. Okay, so when Christ says to the disciples, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. Friends, that is exactly what the Word of God said. That is exactly what the Word of God meant. You and I have no place in our life as Christians to be men and women who are guilty of the act of adultery. But, Christ says, but I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Well, Brother Kyle, surely you're about to tell us that that doesn't mean what we think it means, right? I can't do that. I say unto you, Christ says, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. This evening, I know that you know this, so we're going to go through this relatively quickly, but I want us to think about this. We live in a culture where if you got it, what do you do with it? Flaunt it. Is that not the world that we live in today? If you've got it, flaunt it. Now, I'm going to say this now. We'll touch on it more in just a moment. The statement says that if you look on a woman to lust after her, that statement seems to indicate that this is only a male issue. Remember, who is Christ speaking to? His disciples. It would seem kind of weird to address women having affairs against their husbands in this context, would it not? All right, so he is speaking to the men and he says, whosoever looketh on a woman. Now, we live in a society and we live in a culture where the statement and where the idea is, if you've got it, flaunt it. And as a result, here is what we're seeing more and more of. And really, it's been going on for a long time, so it's not like it's anything new. But we're seeing a lot more women and we're seeing a lot more teenagers and we're seeing even a lot more younger girls who are trying to flaunt whatever it is they've got. And you don't have to go looking for it to see it. I mean, used to, you had to go certain places to really get your eyes full of it. But nowadays, you can just go to Walmart and see more than you need to see. Nowadays, you can just be watching television and see far more than you would ever need to see. And unfortunately, many times, at least during the summer months, you can go to churches and see far more than you need to see. We live in a society today where the imagination is not very needed many times, for men at least, dealing with the opposite sex. As I've been coaching the girls' basketball team the last several weeks, I've been amazed at what some of these parents will let their girls parade out in. Hello? You can go ahead and amen this or grunt at it. I don't care. I'm just telling you, there is something wrong with today's culture when dads who know how the mind works, when dads are okay with letting their daughters out of the house looking like things that used to parade themselves only at night under streetlights. So here we are in 2014. You can get an eyeful at Walmart. You can get an eyeful at the mall. You can get an eyeful at so many places. And unfortunately, you can get an eyeful at church sometimes. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you men, because I'm sure that you are so much more pure than I am. Something presents itself in our presence, and our first thought was, whoa. Now, you don't say that out loud anymore because you're tired of getting hit in the arm. But that used to be like an immediate response. Whoa, did you see that? And then that really riles them up. So in our minds, we say, whoa. Whoa. Understand, there is nothing wrong with the fact that you and I saw something. Because we have no control sometimes over what is brought before us by way of our vision and our ability to see things. And so if I'm sitting there enjoying a football game, which is fairly wholesome overall, and then it goes to a commercial break, and there's this commercial selling hamburgers with the lady who has 90% of her clothes off, that's not my fault. If I'm watching a football game and they feel the need to zoom in on the cheerleaders, that is not my fault. If I'm at Walmart and I walk by someone, and as they pass by me, I realize they don't have much on, that's not my fault. If somebody walks into this church and they don't have on as much as they should, if they don't have on enough, understand, that is not my fault. That is not what Christ is talking about with his disciples. But what he said is this, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her. What does it mean to look upon a woman? It means this, to look upon or to gaze upon and to begin the lusting or the desiring process. It's not just that she appeared and you saw it. It's not even that she appeared and you saw it and your first reaction was whoa or wow or that was pretty or whatever. The problem begins to arise when we look upon it or we begin to gaze upon it or we begin to try to steal a second glance or a third glance or a fourth glance, because whether we want to admit this or not, and whether it's G-rated enough or not, we want to kind of look because it kind of excites us to take a second look. Now, I'm just going to let you sit on that one for a minute, because I know what some of you are going to say. I'm past that. Yeah, we'll deal with that in a minute. Understand, please, I have never, ever, ever come close to having a physical affair with another woman. Never. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful I've never had to confess such a sin to Susie or to the kids or to my family or to the church or to anyone else. But, to stand before you tonight and say I've never taken a second look, to stand before you and say I've never gazed a little bit longer than I should have, I'd be lying. Because I have. And here's what it reveals. I've got issues in my heart related to morality or immorality, just like the one who goes out and commits the affair. Now, I know somebody say, oh, no, 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 you're taking that way too far. I'm telling you what Christ said. So if you think this is being taken too far, you take it up with him. Because Christ said, here's what you've heard of old times, that thou shalt not commit adultery. But, however, I say to you that for the man to look on a woman, to lust after her, he hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, friends, you and I as men can sit here and say, well, I mean, it's not as harmful. I mean, okay, so I steal a look every once in a while. I sneak a peek every once in a while. Some men, if they were honest, they'd have to say, okay, every once in a while I look at some pornography. I mean, it's not like I'm addicted to it. But yeah, I've got a couple of magazines that I look at every once in a while, or there are a few sites that I'll click on from time to time. But it's really no big deal. Try presenting that argument to your wife and seeing if she buys it. Well, you know, we're just trying to spice up the marriage a little bit. You know, we're just trying to keep it interesting in the marriage. No, no, no. You have gone to that source to look upon and to gaze upon because that is what now excites you, because what God has already given you no longer does it for you like it once did. And we can sit here and we can say, my, all of those adulterers out there, all those who live in immorality, all those who live in that wicked sin, don't they know? Yeah, don't we know? Don't we know what kind of problems we're inviting into a marriage? To be looking upon women who are not ours? To be taking in images that are not ours? And somebody say, well, what about the woman? Okay, what about the woman? But what about the man? Men, when are we going to be men enough to turn our heads? Men, when are we going to be men enough to say, I don't have to sneak an extra peek? When are we going to be men enough to say that that's wrong and that's ungodly and that's unrighteous and I'm not going to look at that? When are we as men going to take responsibility for our actions? See, ladies have gotten blamed for a long time. Well, if they wouldn't put it out there, then that wouldn't happen. No, listen. If they put it out there, whatever it is wrong of them. But where is our sense of conviction that says, I'm not going to look? I'm not going to gaze upon. Some of you may work in an environment where there's that pinup girl, where there's that poster, where there's that calendar, where there's that picture that is there. And you know what it's like to walk by in the flesh, say, hey, look. You know what it's like to see the billboards. You know what it's like to see the magazine covers there on those magazine racks right before the checkout stand. You know what it's like. You know what it's like for the flesh to say, go ahead, look, it's no big deal. Go ahead and look, it's not a problem. Yeah, it's not until you've got to try to convey that to your spouse. That you're guilty. And you know what it reveals to your wife? It reveals you've got heart issues. But more importantly, it reveals to the Lord, I have heart issues. Because what I should be turning away from, I'm not, and I'm getting this little bit of a thrill. Why? Because it's not exactly happening for me as it once did inside the boundaries of my marriage. Now, you can sit here and act ignorant to what I'm saying, but I've been married almost 20 years and I know a little bit of what I'm talking about. And knowing where some of y'all have come from, it was a little bit different than where I came from, and if I have troubles with it, I'm going to go ahead and guess that you might have some problems with it. Wow. A lady might say something like this. Pig. Dirty old man. All you guys just think about is one thing and it's the same thing. You guys are disgusting. You guys are trash. You guys are pathetic. I mean, good night. Y'all are like animals. Just give you some fresh meat and y'all get all worked up. Guilty. But ladies, you've got your own set of issues. I know that sight doesn't stimulate you like sight does for men. Ladies, you can at least nod your head and say, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's not that you're blind, but, you know, if a guy walked by you in really short shorts and a tank top, you would be like, oh. That, it would not provoke the same response. But some of you do like your girly movies. Because it lets you escape into some fantasy world where the man is everything you wish your man was. Now, I know I'm about to tread into some territory that's probably dangerous. I understand that I'm probably walking on some thin ice with some of the things that I'm about to say, but I don't care at this stage. I'm just going to go ahead and say this because I've heard this sentiment expressed by more than one lady, so I'm thinking more than one lady struggles with this. But a statement something like this may come out of the mouth of a woman. It's not that I wish my husband looked like that, but I wish my husband loved me like he loves her. You know, if my husband just treated me the way he treats her, I'd be so much happier. She might say something like this. You know, if my husband would just have the same relationship with our kids as he has with their kids, oh, it'd be so wonderful. I wish my husband made the same kind of money that her husband makes. I wish that my husband would take me the places that he takes her. I wish that my husband would do the types of things for me that he does for her. And on and on and on these statements go. I wish my husband was like someone else's husband. Now, I understand that for a woman to catch the husband, I understand that if a woman catches the husband taking a look, sneaking a peek, going back for seconds that stimulates him visibly, I understand that if a woman sees that or catches that or catches wind of it, it hurts them immensely. But ladies, don't sit here for a moment and act like your husband is immune to comments like that. Don't sit here for a moment and act like your husband is not affected when you were to spout off to him something like, "Why can't you treat me like so-and-so treats their wife? Why don't you do for me like they do for their wife? And why don't you buy me what they buy? And why don't you take me where they take me?" Listen, don't act like for a moment that that doesn't bother men. And don't act like for a moment that that does not invite problems into your marriage. And don't act like for a moment that your motives and your thoughts are so pure that all you're doing is desiring a better relationship. Because here is what many ladies will do. They will fantasize and they will daydream of a husband just like what they think another man is. And it only makes them grow more discontent with the current husband they have. Now, he was just talking to men. Get off our case. He was talking to men because he was talking to men. It was the disciples to whom these statements were conveyed. And so he is saying to the men, if you look upon her, if you gaze upon her, and you lust after her, then friends, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And none of us can deny that that is exactly what Christ has said. And so to men, I would say that is exactly what Christ said. That is what he meant. But ladies, I would say this, you're not as pure in your heart either. If you find yourself daydreaming and wishing and escaping your reality in hopes that your husband would become like someone else. It's kind of weird, isn't it, to come to church and talk about our thoughts? Especially about this stuff, because let's just not even go there. But here's what I know some people will do. Because you have to justify it in your mind. You'll say something like this. "Hey, I'm happy." I know. I am too. "I'm happy in my relationship, Brother Kyle." I am too. But you know what I've learned? I've learned I've still got a pulse. And beauty is still beautiful. So I can't really throw that statement out of, "Hey, I'm happy," and expect that to satisfy all the excuses I might have. Somebody might say something like this, "Ha, when you get my age, you don't even notice that kind of stuff." I've said before, you'll lie to me about other things. Because there's only two ways that you don't notice that stuff. You're dead, or you're swinging the other direction. Because beauty is beautiful. And don't act like men that doesn't still catch your attention. And it does not still draw within you and pull at you to take another look or to gaze or to gander or to look upon. And you might say something like, my wife's okay with that. I promise you she's not. I promise you she's not in any form or in any fashion. Or somebody may say something like this. You know, I'm like Job, and I've made a covenant with my eyes. Lord bless you. But all that pious talk just means you're just trying to cover up more of your problem. Because I know some men who are, from what I can tell, they're fairly godly men. And I've heard them make statements like this. I really got to watch myself. I've really got to be careful of the situations that I put myself in. I've got to be very guarded. I've got to be very mindful of this. I've got to turn my head. These are good, godly, perverted, twisted, weird, distorted men. No, they are men who love God, who are trying to serve the Lord, who still happen to notice beauty. So don't leave here tonight and say, oh, yeah, I'm happy. I don't struggle with that. Don't leave here tonight and say, psh, at my age, it doesn't even register. Don't leave here tonight and say, you know, I've gotten victory over that. Because you haven't gotten victory over it for the rest of your life. You need victory in that matter every day of your life. Men, it is easy for us to sit here and say, man, that guy committed adultery. What a dog. What a sorry individual. And he is. Don't think I'm letting the adulterer off easy. Sorry individual. But before we pound on him, you really want to have your thoughts processed and diagnosed and published for everyone to see the last 6 months? I mean, do you really want your thoughts broadcast on the screen and just let everybody see what went through your mind every time you saw something beautiful? Yeah, probably not. Why? Because we're not as pure as we want to pretend we are when we're sitting at church. It can be a struggle. And ladies, don't leave here tonight saying, I'm just so happy. I could never find myself in a position like that. Don't even say that when we've heard you at different times gripe about your husband. When you've said, I wish my husband would just. I'd be so happy if I could just get my husband too. Don't leave here tonight acting like you've got this all together and all squared away and you've not ever entertained thoughts that you should not entertain about other men. Why don't we just be honest and admit tonight that Christ is not only worried about outward conformity, he wants to get to the matters of the heart, and part of the heart struggles that we have is our morality and our thought life and our purity by way of relationships. So nobody will leave here tonight saying, boy, that's a good message. Really spoke to me. Boy, you really stepped on my toes. I've been lusting like crazy. You're not going to leave saying that. I'm smart enough to know that. I figured that one out a long time ago. But I hope to, I really do hope that tonight you'll leave here saying, well, that's something I got to work on. Especially if you haven't been working on it. Because here's what I discovered last week after I preached that whole stupid message about anger. I was presented with so many opportunities this week to be angry. I'm not kidding you. Sunday night, I was presented 3 different opportunities to just blow a gasket and to lose my testimony. So here I am now preaching a message on moral purity of the heart and of the mind. And if you want to sit here and act like, no big deal, you know what you'll find this week? You'll find that you're tested this week in ways like you probably haven't noticed in a long time. So I'm not going to stand before you this evening and say, oh, yeah, I got it whooped, because I don't want to deal with the extra struggles that I'll have this week. But I'd like every one of us tonight to be honest and say, okay, if I haven't been mindful of this, I really need to be mindful of this, because this is serious. Why? Because God sees everything. God sees everything that takes place in my heart. And I don't want to be an adulterer in the heart, even though I may not be in the flesh. Let's all stand tonight and bow our heads for prayer. Father, I pray that you'd help us this evening to not be men and women who grow tired of the marriages you've given us. I pray that you'd help us tonight to be men and women who